Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great deals always. Great staff to deal with there. And by the way, we'll be at Penn's Tavern a week from today. Monday. Coming up on Monday, Penn's Tavern. Sean will be there. Jennifer Wakeman will be there. The suit will be there.
A very special guest will be there.
Yes, and it's not the suit.
No, I wasn't connecting the two. No. If it sounded that way, I apologize.
The suit. Phelps broke a 2,000-year-old record. I'm like going, what are you talking about?
Jennifer Wakeman thought she was the special guest. Well, you're special in your own way, Jen.
Okay, here's a word I want her to always remember. Always. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer is always a special guest.
There you go.
Is she at least smiling now?
She was cackling in the newsroom, so you made her day.
I hear her now. I can hear her in the background.
She can't wait to reconnect with you to get you up to date on her golf lessons,
yeah,
which have been going swimmingly great.
I can't wait to hear about it. May have to use her golf teacher because I've got a match up with Jack Ham, Mike Wagner, and Ron Moeller coming up about a week from Sunday down at Chartiers Valley. And one of the primary motivators is not to embarrass myself. All right, let's get to
Well, especially your partner is probably the greatest ever to wear number 23 for the Steelers, though.
Yes, he probably is. And it is the kind of golf matchup that makes the suit extremely angry. Well, why don't you get their autographs and pictures? People are people. I try to tell him that. People are people. Okay, this is really great. I want your autograph. I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's just, no.
I was trying to convince my 7-year-old nephew that when we were at Steeler training camp last Tuesday, and he didn't buy it one bit, but I tried.
Yeah. He's my golf partner. I mean, you know, he's got enough to worry about trying to shoulder the load with me being carried around on his back for 4.5 hours.
Although he did impress me, though. He was able to get Jim Caldwell's autograph, which was very cool.
Oh, Jim's a great guy.
Absolutely.
God, my goodness. Oh, Jim's a great. Jim and I used to sit out at Lamont Elementary School and watch T-ball together. The one year I didn't coach. And Jim's son and my son were on the same team. And so the two of us would just sit out there for hours and chit-chat about whatever all season long. It really was, I mean, he's just a really good guy. Really good guy. Yeah, and we had a lot of fun. So, all right. And I'll tell you, heck of a coach, too. Boy, was he a great coach here. All right, play-by-play call of the day. Rangers last night, Adrian Beltre at the plate, Eric Nadel on the call on KRLD.
Beltre swings and cranks one to deep left field. That is on its way, and that ball is history. Adrian with his 10th career grand slam. He turns this game around. It's 5-2 Texas, and Globe Life Park is on its feet.
And the A's lost to the Rangers 5-2 last time because of that grand slam. I've only ever seen one grand slam in my life at a live baseball game. One. You know, in terms of, you know, I'm talking about like a Major League Baseball game. Only one time I've ever seen a grand slam. And it was hit by Adrian Beltre. Red Sox beat the Indians 4-3, and his grand slam was the whole thing. Daisuke Matsuzaka won the game, which stunned me. My son and I went to the game, sat 8 rows back behind the visitor's dugout, and it's the only grand slam I've ever witnessed at a Major League Baseball game. All right. So I've seen one of the 10 in person. That was at Fenway as he lifted into the monster seats. All right, let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome back. It's great to have you on board again.
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Football camp, I know there have only been a couple of exposures for the media so far, but what are the general impressions you have been able to get out of those exposures?
I think one of the things that you really notice right off the bat, and this is not as strictly football related as much as it just seems like everyone is having a really good time. I think the energy is high. I know when I talked to Trace McSorley, he said that the Joe Moorhead is exactly the kind of guy that he would expect to have this kind of offense. That sort of they mirror each other. It's high energy. It's quick tempo. There's just a lot of intensity going on. And I think when you go to practice, you see a lot of physicality. You see a lot of guys that are just ready to get at it. Certainly, you know, it's the time of year where every college football player is high on optimism and high on energy. But I think compared to the past few years when you go to practice, like you said, we're not there too much, and there's only so much that you can take away from the drills that you see them working on and what have you. But I think one of the things you notice right off the bat is these guys are just having a lot more fun than I think they've had the past few years.
When there's a turnover in players, Ben, there's also an opportunity for other players to emerge, and then it's also another opportunity for all of us to get to know them a little bit better. You mentioned Trace McSorley. In getting to know him a little bit better, what are a couple of impressions?
I think he's definitely the leader type. I think one of the things that he has in common with Christian Hackenberg is that neither of them, I mean, Hack was known from time to time to be somewhat emotional on the sidelines, and, you know, some of that was just the benefit of, you know, the camera getting him at the wrong time or what have you. But I think Trace is a guy that kind of has a similar demeanor in terms of being sort of collected in the moment where he needs to be. I think he's a guy that understands his role on the team and understands that he has big shoes to fill. He talked about not so much having to fill the shoes of, you know, being the same kind of quarterback that Christian was, but being the kind of guy that can figure out ways to win games and get the ball into the right player's hands when they need to make big plays. So I think you see a guy that understands his role. He's collected. He's calm. And he's pretty mature. I think you look at a guy who's been in this program for a few years. He knows what it means to put in a lot of hard work. And I think, you know, a lot of these guys that work knowing that maybe they'll never see a rep this season, you know, they learn a certain way to grind and prepare that, you know, maybe that goes underappreciated. So I think, you know, certainly going from being a backup to being a starter or a potential starter, at least, is a big shift in how you have to approach things. But I think when you look at Trace, he's a guy who's been preparing for this job or an opportunity to have this job for a few years now.
Another one would be Saquon Barkley, who as a freshman last year did not talk with the media. You know, it's always been standard practice here. Now he's talking, and he's talking a lot. What are your impressions of him?
Oh, I love talking to Saquon Barkley. I think that in a lot of respects, he's as good in front of the camera on a microphone as he is on the football field. I think he's really personable. He's just sort of, I think, you know, a lot of football players, the longer that they play and the longer they're around the media and what have you, they become more and more guarded. And you know, it's hard to blame them. Certainly there are people out there that are always looking for an interesting quote or what have you. But I think Saquon's just excited to be talking about football, excited to sort of just like, you know, get himself out there. And I think when you talk to him, you see a guy who's super confident, but at the same time, you don't see a guy who's really, you know, caught up in the fact that he's one of the best running backs in college football. And you talk to him about that, and he's just like, well, it just sort of worked out that way. And I think, you know, that's the perfect kind of formula that you want to have when you're trying to create, you know, the kind of guy that can be the face of your program, because everyone knows how talented he is on the field. But I think as everyone gets to know who he is off the field and the sort of personality that he has and just sort of the really just, you know, just a beaming sort of ability in front of the camera, I think that people will only, you know, enjoy seeing him even more as the years go along.
What's your anticipation right now? Here it is 2.5 weeks out before the opener. How do you get it this time? I mean, you're trying to work, but what an anticipation level as a reporter for the season to start?
Oh, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think the fact that Joe Moorhead's offense is going to be fun to watch, regardless of how many games Penn State wins or loses, I think that will make everything a lot more fun for everyone. I think that the general consensus on the beat is Penn State may not have a better record necessarily this year than they had last year, but they're going to be a lot more fun to watch. It's going to be a lot more entertaining, and there's going to be a lot more games where things feel like it was right there on the edge. I think the question will be, you know, how fast can they get into the system? How effectively can they execute it? And how can some of these guys who are stepping into new roles, how quickly can they, you know, sort of embrace that and mature quickly? Because I think this Penn State team has far more talent than it's had the past few years, but it's still a matter of experience. It's still a matter of youth. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's four teams on this schedule that are in the top 15, and those guys have all these things that Penn State's still trying to figure out. So I think, you know, all of those storylines, for me at least, there's a lot to look forward to, and it's definitely something, I'm looking forward to coming down the line. And I think the fact that the early season schedule has got a lot of games that are interesting on it. You've got Pitt and Michigan in the first four. Obviously, the season opener is always interesting, and Temple coming to town. You know, there's a lot to look forward to, so I think I'm just as excited as anyone.
What about your thoughts on the defense? You talked a lot about the offense. Brent Pry takes over defensively. What is your sense there, especially with a guy like Naeem Wharton-White back?
I think it's a pretty seamless transition from the standpoint of having a new defensive coordinator in there. I've always felt that Brent Pry has been a guy that's gone underappreciated by fans to a certain extent because Bob Shoup was so good, but I think Brent Pry had as much to do with the defensive success as anyone. So I think from that standpoint, the transition's been smooth. But like you said, there's a chance for new guys to make names for themselves because there are guys on the defensive front that are going to have to step into those Anthony Zettel, Austin Johnson roles, Carl Nassib roles. Like you said, at the same time, you bring back Naeem Wharton-White, who's going to give Penn State three solid linebackers. The depth there is still a little bit up in the air. There's guys that have experience, but not tons of experience. You're going to need the Jake Coopers of the world to step up. You're going to need the Parker and Curtis Copper and the Kevin Givens on the defensive front to step up. But I think, ultimately this Penn State defense might not be quite as good as it was last year. It might not put up the sack totals that it put up last year. But I don't think you're going to see a major step backwards because at the end of the day, Penn State's defense last year was one of the best in the nation. So it's just hard to keep that up year after year.
Because that's one of the things I remember distinctively last year in the opener at Temple, as Penn State had real control on that game when both Bell and Wharton were in the game together.
Yeah, no, they're great communicators. They do a good job getting everyone on the same page. And I think that's one of the things that you talk to those guys, and you talk to the guys in the secondary even, that they can be great equalizers and getting everyone on the same page. And I think getting a guy like Naeem Wharton-White back into the mix, even, it remains to be seen if he's at the middle or if he's at the outside. I think Kabinda probably at this point has a lockdown on the middle spot just because he played so well there last year when Wharton was out. But I think ultimately when you get both of those guys on the field and Brandon Bell on the field, all three of them communicating on the same page, it really sets the front up well. Even when these guys aren't as experienced and the guys behind them know that everyone's on the same page, so it's definitely a big asset for them.
Yeah, no question. Then the kicking game. This is something they've spent a lot of time on special teams, and James has talked about it. They've spent a lot of time on special teams. They know that this is a swing factor. What's your gut telling you about how much better they could potentially be on special teams?
Well, I don't think that there's any doubt that when you've got a guy like Alex Barbier that can kick the field goals for you and punt it well for you, when you're in that kind of position to improve your special teams, Blake Gillikin is another guy that they brought in. So they've got, two top flight punters and kickers that come in there. And you're looking, I think the biggest thing for special teams last year wasn't the fact that these guys couldn't kick it far. It was a matter of consistency. You'd have, somebody would punt it 45 yards and then somebody would punt it 45 yards into the, 15 rows deep. So I think really, there's a great opportunity here for this unit to improve. But at the same time, there's no doubt that these guys can kick it in practice. You just got to be able to go out and execute. But I think, like you said, if Penn State's able to add 15 yards onto these punts, add 15 yards of consistency, add just a few percentages of consistency on there. You look at a lot of these games that Penn State had to punt it in key situations, and they were able to do it, and then you look at games where Penn State had to punt it in key situations and struggled to. So I think if they can be consistent, that's absolutely an opportunity to win some games. When you're late in a game, you've got a lead, you've got the defense on the field, because 15 yards here or there is sometimes the difference between a game-winning field goal and a game-winning defensive drive.
Right, no question. Basketball is not working out right now. They're done with their summer workouts. I want to get to the non-conference schedule first because that's been released in its entirety. So what's your thought on the non-conference schedule and also then base it on what he's done recruiting-wise to get them to this point?
I think when you look at that non-conference schedule, you're looking at an opportunity to get these guys a lot of experience because there's no question that this team is going to play a lot of guys that haven't played Division I or basketball before. But Duke is a bit of luck of a draw. But to go to George Washington, to play Georgia Tech, to play George Mason, to go and play Pitt in a neutral site, to play St. John, these are all games that are going to give you that Big Ten feel. George Washington and Pitt especially have that sort of physical brand, athletic brand that I think in a lot of ways Penn State is trying to mirror. Duke is obviously, with that recruiting class that they're bringing in, there's no better way to figure out where you stand early in the season than to play one of the best recruiting classes in the nation and a national title contender. But I think when you talk to Pat, you talk to these guys on the team, that really this non-conference schedule, as much as you're trying to win every game, this is about getting prepared for the grind in the Big Ten. And you talk to Sandy Barber about what he wants to see from this program in the next few years, this year, next year, when this talent comes in and gets experience. It comes down to, can you make a move in the Big Ten? Can you go from that lower third to that middle third to the middle upper part of that third? I don't think anyone's expecting Penn State to contend for a Big Ten title in the next 3 years. But I think certainly, if you're looking for improvement, that comes down to being able to make a move in the conference, and being able to do that comes from experience, and coming from experience, getting that experience comes from a strong non-conference schedule. And I think a lot of ways you see this non-conference schedule is more about experience and less about picking up easy wins.
The upper third gets you automatically to the NCAA tournament. The middle third gets you right in the mix for it. I mean, so getting there would be a big step.
Oh, absolutely, especially this year, because I think you have to look at these guys in a bit of a two-year situation, because it's going to be a lot to ask the Tony Carrs and Lamar Stevens is to go out there and, you know, make the kind of difference where Penn State's going to just make this big leap in the conference over 1 year. But I think, without a doubt, if you get yourself in that middle third there, you're in the mix. If Penn State could make the NIT this year, I think, you know, obviously Penn State hasn't made what you consider at least to be the traditional postseason under Pat Chambers. And I think to make that step to the NIT this year and then really try and make a push the season after that for an NCAA title bid, or not the title rather, but just a bid into the tournament itself. I think that's obviously on the radar right now.
Ben, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. Interesting, Golf Digest has put out a refresher on the Olympics and golf. And I didn't like the golf format. The standard weekend tournament is what it is, which is, you know, you're playing in the Travelers Championship, except it's in Rio. But there are all sorts of stupid rules. I mean, the Olympics, what should the Olympics be about? And besides the kumbaya, we all love each other deal, I got it. Okay. But when it comes to the absolute competition of it, okay, what should it be about, Sean? Finding the best.
Best from your country, one-on-one, pure competition.
Okay. Now, here's the Olympic golf format. People forget this because so many people withdrew. The United States had four, but that was the most you could have in the tournament from a country. And you had to be ranked in the top 15. So if you have eight people ranked in the top 15 from one country, only four can go. Okay, that's it. And after the top 15, a maximum of two players can qualify per country, and Brazil gets a guaranteed spot. They're the host country. All right. Well, so what's the goal of this? I mean, what's the goal? You're going to do it this way. That's the goal? Like I explained yesterday with Gabby Douglas, she finished third in the preliminary for the all-around. Third. She should be in. It's the Olympics, okay? Okay.
This is not T-ball where everybody participates. I want to see the best go against the best. And if you're going to do it like this, turn it into a team event with a team gold medal. And you can do that. Alternate shot, four ball, match play. There's a lot of ways you can do it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I actually bought my property. I didn't steal it from anybody. But that's okay. I have a mortgage and everything. Stop laughing, Sean.
It was funny.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. The Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, well, time now for our sports bozo of the day. This is an all-encompassing one. It's the standoff between James Harrison and the NFL. And part of the problem is the NFL Players Association. Now, the NFLPA, which is involved in this, it is allowed, just so you know, in the basic agreement that you can be investigated for something where an accusation has been made. Okay. So, yeah, you're allowed to do it. But again, anybody can make an accusation. Now, we make all sorts of accusations about the suit. I would say 95% are true, but there are 5% where we could debate. But in that 5%, it's more probable than not, correct? Stop laughing, Sean.
It's more like 10, more like 10%.
Yeah. But in other words, anybody can make an accusation because some group makes an accusation. Now you have to be investigated. What? Really? So, they've stonewalled. Here's what's at issue for me. Are you tested for PEDs in the National Football League? Yes. So somebody then accuses you of using performance-enhancing drugs, and you keep testing negative for it. Why should you have to then talk to the league about it? Right? If I've tested negative for performance-enhancing drugs under league policy and something negotiated by the National Football League Players Association, and Al Jazeera accuses me of using performance-enhancing drugs, why do I have to talk to you because I'm already tested for that and I keep testing negative? Haven't I already proven I'm negative? That's what's so bizarre about this. If they were not testing for PEDs, okay, I'd say go talk. But I don't get this. If there was no testing, then, all right, I can see it. But the fact is, they're tested. Well, if you're tested, that's what has to tell you whether it's true or not. It's not a more probable than not. The test is an absolute. So that's why it's an all-around bozo of the day. I just don't see it.
All right.
I mean, here's the agreement that they have. Here's the agreement. Now, you got to start there. Because this is what the league agreed to and what the players agreed to. So this is agreed to. Okay. Policy, let's see. There's a higher threshold for a positive marijuana test and a 2-game suspension upon conviction or plea agreement for driving under the influence. Okay. HGH testing should begin by the end of the month. Okay. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Let's see. According to some players are into the early stages of the program. Simply take a step back. Let's see. I'm trying to see here what the actual policy is. This is more of a story about how it came about. All right. That story is not going to help. Let's see. And again, this was agreed upon to in September 18, 2014. All right, so let's see. They originally agreed to HGH testing, human growth hormone, which is a key part of this thing, in 2011. Players had balked at the science and the testing and the appeals process for positive tests. Let's see. Appeals of positive tests under the PED policy, including HGH, will be heard by a third-party arbitrator whom the league and union officials will choose jointly. A first violation of a PED policy will result in a suspension without pay for up to 6 games, depending on the violation. Positive tests for diuretics or masking agents result in a 2-game ban. Positive tests for a steroid, stimulant, or HGH result in a 4-game ban. Evidence that an attempt was made to manipulate a test result will result in a 6-game suspension. Players get a 10-game suspension for a second violation. Third positive test means the suspension of 2 years. Positive tests for banned stimulants in the offseason will no longer result in suspensions. However, these cases, players will be referred to the substance abuse program. Positive tests for stimulants during the season will be considered a violation of the PED policy and result in a 4-game ban. A neutral party will hear appeals of PED violations. Commissioner Roger Goodell will retain the authority under the personal conduct policy to mete out suspensions. And then there's them goes into the goes into what the recreational drug. Okay, let's get to the testing. Okay, didn't say how often they're tested. Let me see. But the key is I also want to see how often they're tested. I know they'd love it to be random. But human growth hormone is a big part of this Al Jazeera report. Well, if these guys are tested for it and they keep testing negative, then there shouldn't be an issue here. I mean, in fact, that's why you dismiss it. I mean, let's see here. Dr. John Lombardo said, quote, "I think the difficulty with HGH testing is the sensitivity of the test in the window that you can detect it. The test we have now is a very short window. There's another test that's being developed now that has a much longer window. It could be 5 to 8 days. You get that test, and it's going to be a different situation. The short window is a tough one to deal with, and that's the same in every sport. I'm sure at some point in time, somebody will test positive if they're using it. So, again, if you keep testing negative, you shouldn't have to sit down with the commissioner.
It's either yesterday or today. I've now seen two reports, one from Bob Pompeiani, and he was doing a Facebook Live 2.5-minute comment that Harrison was tested. It was either yesterday or this morning. And also, I found a story on FoxSports.com that's saying that he was just tested. So within the last 48 hours, he was tested.
Yeah.
Yep.
He took it. In fact, I've got the story right here.
Yep.
Harrison says he has taken a random drug test for performance-enhancing drugs on Tuesday. And this is what he posted. He said, quote, this is his quote, "Surprise, surprise, your boy got a random PED test today." That was his quote. And I don't get this. I don't get what the NFL's doing here with this. The NFL, by the way, also was forbidding Harrison to videotape the PED test. Well, what do you want? let's see here. Let's see the procedures here or not. Now, the Deadspin says it's easy to beat. I don't know. But the key is, I want to know when, how often you have to be tested. NFL players tested for PEDs.
It reminds me of that ESPN show that was on, I want to say it was over 10 years ago, called Players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one episode focused on, yep, the P-man's ready to show up. Get ready.
Oh, well, I mean, I know how they used to do it with Penn State. Practice would be over and the list would be on the door. It's like, okay. I mean, that's how, I remember walking to the locker room and guess what? here, these 24 names are up there. Time to go. I mean, that's the... I mean, that's random. Like, oh, great. 20, you know, I mean, there'd be 24 names up on the door. Okay. You have to go. Let's see. Okay, the NFL can perform random drug testing year round. Every player in the league gets tested at least once a year through urine sampling. The NFL reviews their methods and systems quarterly and is working on consistently upgrading their protocol, which is fine. I completely agree with that. The league's agreement with the players includes testing for HGH, human growth hormone. However, after two seasons into the new collective bargaining agreement, there's no unified agreement or protocol, which they did change, by the way. And so it can be random. Everybody gets a one test a year. You just don't know when the test is going to be. And you can get multiple tests. Let's see. NBA. All players subject to random drug testing during the preseason, with rookies tested three times on a random basis throughout the season. Okay. NHL. PED testing has fewer restrictions and is more open than baseball, the NFL, and the NBA. It occurs randomly up to three times a year. It is done through urine analysis. Testing takes place on teams' off days during the regular season. No testing is done during the playoffs or off season. The Olympics. We don't care. We just want records. It's an interesting policy. The Olympics, which has more rampant cheating than anything out there, it's rampant. You have an entire Russian track team banned right now. They say that Olympic athletes can randomly be tested 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, no exceptions. So they do have a very strict testing protocol. Unless the Olympics are in Russia, where they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get it to you in a minute.
So over under between now and Sunday, I'll put it at 1.5. Will we hear of a medalist within the last week and a half get his or her medal taken away from them because of a bad drug test?
I'm going to say none. I think the Russian track thing, I think, kind of got to people. You know? I mean, they banned a whole team. So how about if I take the, I'll take the under. I'll say none.
Okay.
Now, a couple of fans, I think, have, but I mean, it's... Some of them wear suits to work. We'll come.
Winner buys drinks Monday at Penn's Tavern. Oh, wait, that's already covered. We're good.
Yeah, already covered. We got that. We got that covered. That's all good. All right. We'll take a break. Wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Stretch. Big ESPN article where Harbaugh and other college football coaches go for peace. Okay.
Sure.
Are you going to read that? No. I don't care what Harbaugh does in his free time, nor do I care what Nick Saban does in his free time. It's their business. They don't care what I do. So, no. Now, the Olympics are making a huge deal, and I understand why, about the American track helping the other one up after they fell. Calling it Olympic spirit. Ah, the Olympic spirit. Abby DiGostino. Urging Nikki Hamlin to finish. After a fall in the 5,000 meters, then they hugged at the end and the whole deal. Okay. They finished next to last and last. They both ended up going to the final.
It was a really great moment. But you know what? Stuff like that happens all the time. I mean, how many times, and I know, look, I'm speaking to all of you on this one because you've lived it. How many times have you heard about a neighbor who has somebody over at Geisinger and, oh, guess what? We made a meal for them. How many people over time, next door neighbor, they're snowed in, you've got a snowblower, you go over, you snowblow the driveway. How many times do you checked in on an elderly neighbor to make sure they're doing okay in a heat wave or when it's really cold? How many times you gone over and checked on somebody else's pets that, you know, is a favor to them, the whole thing? You know, nice stuff like this happens all the time, every single day. Now, it's nice this happened on the Olympic stage, but, you know, and, you know, there's a great spirit and a great example to it. But to be honest with you, people do this stuff all the time. I watched the other day in Louisiana. A woman and her dog in the flooding down there. And this guy dove into what is obviously terrible, probably diseased water, and saved the woman and the dog.
Yeah, that video went viral. And yeah, there was a convertible car, and he was like ripping the convertible top off to help her out.
There is an inner goodness in all of us. And these random acts of kindness happen every single day. I mean, it was a beautiful thing to see on the Olympic stage, but don't give me this Olympic spirit stuff. I'm sorry. It's the Olympic spirit. You know, people do stuff for other people all the time. Right. It just doesn't get talked about. And, of course, this is on a bigger stage than the Olympics. So that part I do get. But don't tell me it's Olympic spirit. Really?
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.